here in terms of this discussion is that we don't want to eliminate the ability to use a touch of color here and there on these buildings.
And how do you do that?
Well, I mean, there's going to be a certain amount of discretion if this is the route you take. I mean, we can eliminate talking about building design at all if you want to. But if we talk about it, then you're going to have to say that, you know, you want a palette, a selection of colors predominantly that is within the range of the natural landscape, but that, you know, the designer may choose to use brighter colors for accents. And then I think he would specifically call out doors and trim. You know, nothing we've looked at so far is particularly reflective. We're going to end up having to talk about reflection and glare in this conversation at some point. But as long as it's not, you know, a brightly reflective color and is, you know, comparable in hue, because you could find a blue that complemented this brown very nicely. That wouldn't be hard to do.
This is a point, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, this is the guy, this building was designed and built by the same guy that designed and built the Boulder Mountain Lodge.
Okay, so there we are. You know, that's the colors that person works with.
You can't see it, but the stonework around there is a lot of the same stone. And this building looks pretty monotone, but it almost mirrors the color of the Boulder Mountain Lodge. And did a couple of little things on that roof, but... You know, the other thing you got to talk about, do you guys really seriously think that a color palette, I don't know. I wish we had more from the Planning Commission here because, you know, is Boulder ready for a color palette? I don't have an opinion on that. I'm just throwing the question out.
It seems to me that this whole conversation, in the spirit of what you just said, Curtis, is there another picture of that building in their pig, or is that the only picture we've got of that building?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we can move on to the next building. I think we've exhausted the possibilities of that one, but it seems to me that while people didn't really recognize it so much, you already have design language in your ordinance that would allow the Planning Commission, if they were adventuresome enough, to talk about all these things. It's really broad design language that honestly is not very helpful as guidance. And so I would rather say to people, if you want to talk about design at all, and I am not saying that you should, but if you want to talk about it at all, then let's put it in a box that's reasonable, that provides some guidance to people. And that would include saying something about color reflectivity. It might or might not include something about roof lines. And we have an example of a different type of roof here, which I'm curious about what people's reaction to this structure is in several different ways. That sign would not be allowed in Boulder, right? That would be too large for Boulder's
sign. On the side of the building?
Right.
You'd have to measure it to know.
You'd have to measure it. I mean, being on the side of the building is not the issue. The issue is the size of it. It's kind of a scale.
Is that considered a sign?
Yes. Yes. It is considered a sign.
Lee,
that's interesting.
I don't know where Matt went, but this is the building that he cited to you as an example of a large mass that dominated the landscape. And the other one, the first one you did was just the front lodge. And then a bunch of detached forms. So it comprised like six or seven buildings. And so this is the contrast of what Matt was saying today in his email was, this was what he felt didn't work in Boulder versus the other one with the detached forms did work. But I wish Matt was on so he could.
Matt's on. He could.
I'm here. So I mean, the colors are fine on the Prospector Inn, but the aesthetics of the building, there's absolutely nothing interesting in it to me.
Right.
It just looks like a big brick blockhouse, right?
It is not interesting.
No. And so.
So is that, the roof line? Yeah. Is the roof line okay with people?
It's all right. Hip roofs for me. I mean.
Yeah.
It's not again, a very traditional. Not traditional in desert environments. Hip roofs are really not, don't come out of any native desert cultures, whether it be from Africa or Middle East or Native American. That's not a roof line that comes out of these environments, that's for sure.
Well, this kind of a building is a lot cheaper to build than something that we looked at with like Mark's buildings, the lodge, correct? Mm-hmm. Isn't that why they build them like this, all under wooden roof and all brick? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The
you know what? What I was going to say, what I find interesting about this is, even our dimension of this building that's fronting the road doesn't really help the situation, because there's no screening or buffering and that stark sign in the front, and it's just pretty ugly.
It's all concrete.
It's really a minimalist building. You know, and it makes a point that I made with you guys a long time ago as we were talking about why we need a different type of performance standard than saying that the maximum number of units in a motel should be 30 units, because what this demonstrates to you is that you can build a motel that needs some aesthetic help, but that probably doesn't have more than 30 units in it, does it? So
yeah,
let's move on to the next building. I think we probably have exhausted the possibilities of that one. If we can see what she sent us next. She sent us enough to have make some good points here.
I agreed with a lot of the points that you made today too, Matt. Have you ever been out to Kayenta?
No.
I've never been to Kayenta.
Which is north of... So all their new buildings are all very cookie cutter, all ground colored. It's really interesting out there. Oh, yeah. I like this building.
Yeah, I think the Outfitters is great. Traditional roofline dormers.
That's a pleasant building.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Typical bank.
Typical bank, flat roof.
Yeah.
Nice roof line on that little cabin there.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with steel roofs. And then here's a very complicated roof line there.
They have apartments up there.
Right. Well, you know, and that's something we need to be cognizant of, is if you have a hospitality business, do you need to be able to have apartments there to house employees? And, you know, to me, that's a desirable mixed use. You have to think about, you know, the looks of this. But the shutters, now here's a detail of this building we can talk about that gets back to my point about, you know, attracting attention with a little color on an otherwise earth-toned building. You know, how do you feel about the shutters over there on the second story at the far end?
Yep.
Are they okay or are they a little gaudy?
I like them.
I don't know. For the record, Lee, I think accents of different colors are fine by me.
Yeah.
It's the main body that I think.
Right. No, I, and this building, we're getting, you know, these pictures that she sent, we've got to thank her for these pictures, because they are helping us make many of the points, or at least to talk about many of the points we need to talk about. I think those are almost out of scale in my mind, but I certainly don't mind the color contrast at all. So what other building has she got there, Peg?
So I have one question here.
Sure.
Would you consider that like a Western style?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you get into vernacular architecture, which this is, to say folk architecture, then talking about styles gets to be really squirrely.
Yeah.
And you have to decide what you want to call it. But I'd say Western-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that building and where it is. Mm. And, you know, you look at this building now, is that Western with the timbers exposed, the steel roof and the brown? color scheme is pretty nice for this environment.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. It's sort of a massive,
yeah,
without character with some of the elements of stuff.
That long roof line, of course, this is going to vary somewhat with what angle you look at it, right? That's another consideration that we would have to add in as we think about things in real time. But that's a big straight line there, and a very, very large expanse of steel. So, you know, is that too big? Would that be too big in Boulder? It's probably not too big where it is.
As you're going into Escalante,
right,
from Boulder, actually, that's a brand new motel or inn there. Yeah.
And it actually looks big where it is because it's perched up on a hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting you were saying, because it's out in the middle, like there's nothing around it. So the expanse is like the expanse around it. I kind of like this building.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a little different when these trees, assuming that they continue to irrigate and maintain these trees that they've planted, those trees, if you give them 15 years, which is a while, but if you give them 15 years, this building's going to have a bit softer character to it than it does right now. And I would say that at that point, I mean, I don't know what those are. I'm assuming they're probably cottonwoods, but who knows? You know, if these trees actually get up to a 20-foot diameter, they'll make a pretty significant difference in the visual impact that building has. And so you have to have the landscaping that you select working with the architecture. But I think that the question about this building in my mind for Boulder is just about the that one long roof line, but it's broken up, you know, the rest of the building. That roof line breaks up the rest of the building, so maybe that's your trade-off there with it. It's certainly better than many other buildings that we could pick out in southern Utah, that's for sure. And this is in, you know, I was thinking about lodging places, and I imagine you've mostly probably all passed through Kanab once in a while. And I was thinking about like the new La Quinta Inn with its really super contemporary look there in Kanab. Some of you seen that?
Yep.
And wondering, you know, that, I don't know how that would sit. I would find that kind of out of scale and out of place in Boulder.
Well, so have you been to Kanab then recently? How did you see that La Quinta?
Yeah, I stayed in that La Quinta actually.
I think
on the way to the 2018 meeting in Boulder.
Oh, okay.
I got as far as Kanab on my way to Boulder and was tired and thought I'm stopping here.
Yeah.
So I actually stayed in that building.
Well, I think one of the things I don't like about Kanab and what they've done is to promote and have, there must be five or six now brand new motels right in their old downtown section that look totally out of place. Big two mm-hmm. stories, like the La Quinta,
right.
You know, they're big. And
they
just
big.
Don't fit in.
Well, eventually Kanab's gonna look really different than it does now, or
oh,
than it
yeah.
always did. And those buildings may end up being the mode by the time people are done building. If property values keep to increase there, you know, the monument has been so bad for Kanab's economy. And then you got this, which is a big line with a lot of sign, and a really long roof line there. Nothing wrong with the colors per se. If you take the signs down to, I mean, you could see that sign from half a mile away if it was a third the size that it is. If you got the signs in scale, given that it is what it is, that building is not necessarily so bad. It does have the issue we've been talking about being a big, long expanse without much architectural relief. And I had already written one draft standard for you about architectural relief, about rhythm and so on. We might want to talk about how important that is. Any other reactions to this building besides the sign?
I have a question, and that's just because it is a, because it is what it is. Would there have been a requirement by the parent company to have a sign that size? Do they do that?
My guess is that Best does not make you have a sign that big. Most franchises do have something about signs, but that's a really big sign. For one thing, that's an expensive sign. You know, you got to think about these things in terms of somebody paid for that. And that's an expensive sign. I got another question for you about it while we're looking at this. How do you feel about chain link fence?
Well,
I don't like it, but that's me.
I don't like it, but that's me.
Well, it's interesting because
purpose,
all of these places, I mean, this is kind of a cookie cutter. You can go to Loa over the mountain and here's, they have the same Escalante, I mean, the same home center, but mm-hmm. Their sign is definitely not as big as this. So they all look kind of similar. Do they? I mean, mm-hmm. is that a required sign? I mean, a fence, or could you do something differently? Could you make
I think that they could obviously build a different type of fence. Chain link is extremely efficient in the sense that it's pretty easy to put up relative to other types of fence. Chain link in and of itself is not necessarily cheap, but it's easy to put up, provides visibility into the yard there, which some people would say is for security.
And it holds up in the weather, any kind of weather, right?
It does. It's an extremely useful product in a lot of situations, but it's not very aesthetically pleasing. And I think, and of course, it's quite a ways back from the highway here in this application. So that makes some difference too. But, you know, the building, the form of the building is based on the merchandise that's offered there. And if you're going to have something like that in Boulder, which I don't see Boulder supporting anytime in the foreseeable future, but if you were to have something like that, then the form of it's going to look something like this. But there are some awfully attractive hardware stores around the world, too, that overcome. They serve the same function. They have the same type of interior space because that's what you have to have for what they're offering for sale. But they do some different things with the outside. And certainly it's unusual to see a hardware store that has a sign that big. You know, the Lowe's that I shop at from time to time, sign is not that big.
So, that's a good point. It is a big sign.
Well, and in Boulder, that wouldn't be possible. The way your ordinance is written, you couldn't do it. So did...
Hey, I have a statement on that, on the chain link fence. Yeah. You'd have to consider what other options there would be for security fences if you weren't to go with chain link.
Right.
And if you're, you know, wood is so high maintenance, it's really not very functional. Plus, it's easy to break in.
Yep. Yeah, and I would add on that property, I mean, the colors are fine by me. It's not parallel to the road, which is good. And that chain link fence is actually, though I may not like them, it's in the back. And if it had appropriate screening and whatnot, then it wouldn't matter.
If you had vegetation in front of that fence, it would matter not at all, right?
Well, I mean, the fence itself is probably 80 feet from the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the back end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So can we get this picture, this Lakina picture that Josie has here up?
Is this the one in Kanab?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a way to get that pig?
I'll stop sharing. You can put it up.
Josie, were you going to put something up?
Oh, it's in chat. I can share if that's easier.
Yeah.
Or you can just maybe click on the chat. I don't know. I can share it. I'll get it off my desktop.
And for the note, Lee, I do want to hear a little bit about, because I don't quite understand it, what architectural relief and rhythm like you're talking about.
Okay, we can take a minute on that. Since the big box era started, gradually back in the 70s and then continuing on up, and buildings like, say, a Costco or a Sam's Club or a harvest size Target, you know, a harvest size Target is 4 acres under the roof. It's a big building.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. 4 acres. Think about that.
Under one roof.
The big Walmarts are also around 4 acres, the really big Walmarts. And what people found is exactly what we've been talking about, is then these buildings have 200 foot plus long, well, there it is, Makita. And we can talk about how architects of the modern era deal with building rhythm right there in order to make that not be, because that functionally inside that building, these things don't do anything. Okay. There's no function. This building is rooms flat there where the windows are. And so the architects who designed it, I have no idea who they were, had the idea of rhythm and relief in mind. And so here we've got a difference in color. We've got a difference in poking this one out, pulling this one back. This is a purely architectural feature here. And that's one, a very contemporary solution to the idea of a big monolithic wall. Because otherwise, this hotel would be equally functional with a wall there. And that would be what, how big is that building? I'm trying to get my memory shaken together here. 140 feet, 160 feet. Maybe a little more than that. Unrelieved, but in order to make it fit the design theme that the La Quinta chain had before it became part of the Wyndham Group. You know, there's one of these very similar to this over in Cedar City too. Some of you may have seen on the south edge of Cedar. This right here is what you would learn about dealing with rhythm and relief from monolithic walls if you were in architecture school right now. Is pop it out, pull it back, change the color, change the texture. All of those things, some of them can be functional and work functionally. Others are purely decorative. But that's kind of the, you know, that's a very contemporary response to it. My response to it in a place like Boulder would be more like you simply vary the building line, you pop some things out, you pull them back. You don't have to vary color and material the same way, at least say if you're a building the scale of the Boulder Mountain Lodge. But you do then break it up, you know, and that's back to our blue doors on that other building, right? You'd use color to break it up that way. This is a great illustration of there's a whole lot of different responses you can make. And you don't want to tie a designer's hands by getting too specific. You obviously don't want this in Boulder. Both the scale of it and the architecture are incompatible, I guess, to sum it up in one word. This might actually be a jarring disharmony.
Yeah,
exactly. In Boulder. But it's obviously a perfectly functional building in other contexts, and a reasonably, you know, efficient way to provide lodging. But the techniques you see here on a smaller scale, probably using different materials, are all techniques that you can use to break up a building line and add interest. Now, if you think about that hardware store, Escalante, the best hardware. There are a lot of places where you will find local regulations including some that I have administered. But one that I inherited, I wish I had a picture of it. I don't keep a picture of it around because it's ugly, but one I inherited when I went to work in Vermont was there's a small box store back here in the Northeast called the Christmas Store, the Christmas Tree Store. And it's similar to, it's kind of like halfway between Target and Dollar General, I guess is how I would describe it. And in Williston, they didn't want to comply with the building rhythm and interest regulations, but in the end they had to if they wanted to go into business there, and they did. It was a lucrative market. So they actually built in old-fashioned display windows like you used to see in downtowns.
Oh.
Okay, like a JCPenney. Think back to a 1960s JCPenney store or something like that. And they actually built them in put reasonably attractive backings on them. And they switch merchandise in and out of a couple of them. They use a couple of them for displays for local scout groups and charitable groups and so on. And so it actually worked out pretty well in the final analysis. It doesn't change the interior of their store a bit, right? Their interior of their store looks like one that was shaped like a box somewhere else. But it does change when you're walking down the sidewalk beside it. It makes a pretty big difference in that development. And so, you know, you could certainly take that hardware store add some interest by putting in display windows. Windows, a lot of people don't like windows in those buildings. People are moving away from that as they try to comply with energy conservation standards because they need daylighting anyway to illuminate their stores. But of course, you can accomplish that with skylights too in a building like that. But you could vary that building with a couple of faux display windows. You could pop it out at some point by 4 feet. You could change colors up and down. You'll also see a lot of places where when they're rehabilitating box stores, you know, because with box stores, we've got a lot of box stores that are 50 years old now in the country. And when they're rehabilitating them, one of the architect's tricks that is actually rather simple, rather inexpensive, is that you'll hang metal screening off the side of the building. Be a fine textured metal screen of a certain color, and you'll put that over a portion of the building to show some texture relief and so on and some color. There's a lot of different ways to do it. In Boulder, we're talking about scaling all those things way, way down. And I guess my response, you know, in terms of, hey, if the Planning Commission is looking at that, is that you'll know it if you see it. And if a person who wants to do a project and to have a building that would be that long and that in need of thinking about this particular subject in Boulder, it probably would be lodging, right? That's the most logical thing that we could imagine. People are not going to build a retail store of that scale in Boulder at this point, I don't think. You'll know it when you see it. You'll know if they tried to comply with a standard like that just by looking at the renderings they bring in terms of what they did with the texture, color, and shape of the exterior. It doesn't have to be complicated like this Lakina, but some of the same tricks that are being used there would work just fine. You know, a simple one that I can think of that could be on like a lodge type building to add relief and that would also be functional would be to have a fireplace that backs up out the exterior and have a stone fireplace. And so you could imagine a building that's, let's say, 100 feet long, 120 feet long, something in the small motel range. You could have doors with a porte-cochere over it or a ramada over it or something that creates relief there. You could come down a ways from those and have a fireplace in the lobby with the stone fireplace backing out to the exterior. to create a different texture and color there. There are some things you could do that are logical and simple enough for a building like that that really would create relief over a big long wall. You know, that Prospector Motel that we were looking at, the hip roof sets me off. I don't like the hip roof, but setting the roof line aside, going down that wall, it would not be very hard to create some interest with relatively simple, relatively affordable things. You know, you can put an arcade in front of the building, like on that one building, the Chuck Wagon we were looking at. You know, there are things they can do to respond to your request for some variety. And, you know, you're going to know it pretty much the minute you look at renderings, if they have heard what you had to say or not. And, you know, if it's a corporate presence, like, say, Dollar General, wanted to put a store there, they would have to decide whether they want to comply or not. It is very easy to dress up a steel building. It's very easy. They could do it. So any questions? I've rattled on a little too long about that, but I just wanted to make the point that I think you would know it when you saw it. And if that's what you want to try to achieve, you write a relatively general standard. And the people who are actually paying attention to what you have to say will bring you what you want.
I've got a couple more.
I have a comment. Sorry.
Go right ahead.
Do you want me to set up a couple more of cookies?
Sure.
You keep talking.
Okay. Yeah. Matt, what was your thought?
So just an overall comment. If someone goes through, if this all sort of pans out, someone goes through the commercial standards, they get something passed, mm-hmm. then they would have to as well conform to the current commercial design standards
mm-hmm.
For the preliminary plat, or however, I don't even know where it comes into play, but how do those two relate?
Well, it would be just like the rest of the standards. It would be a condition of the conditional use permit.
Okay.
Okay. And so, you know, the thing that you have to be very explicit about, and it doesn't require any legal changes, okay, over what you're doing now, but you have to be explicit about it, particularly in the way you write your minutes when you're approving something, is that people are getting approval of exactly what they gave you, right?
Right.
And in complicated land use codes, you'll find quite a bit of language in there about what they can change later and what they can't. You know, when I write a code like that, I'll write a small slate of things they can change that can be approved by the administrator. And then anything beyond that has to come back to the review board to make sure that it's consistent with the conditional use permit. It's important to be very clear. Like I said, it requires no change in your code per se, in your ordinance, but it's important to be clear that they're getting approved what they gave you on the plans.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So yeah,
there's a building that would fit in Boulder. Right.
Yeah, that's on the corner there of the highway. Yeah. Well, that's a nice little building.
The roofing, actually.
You what?
What color is that roofing, actually? Is it a gray?
It's kind of blue with a gray building.
Yeah. And a grayish blue, yeah.
Yeah. And then they're using that red trim to highlight everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a nice, simple building, and it has a beautiful tree with it that sets everything off. The important thing is to not let people take out those trees. When you've got big mature trees on a lot like that, you make people keep them. Make them build around them. Because that, you know, that's a super simple building, which is probably quite functional for what it does. Super simple fence there that leads in. The other thing about buildings that this illustrates is that it's possible to create a sense of entrance. makes the building better, makes it more legible what the function of that building is. If you create a good sense of entrance, which they've done in a very simple way here with a few poles, leads you right in. And then you've got the color as you're coming in that accents things. It's actually a very simple but very effective thing. And, you know, the key is they kept the tree.
Yeah, and it's not a chain link fence either.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
They don't need security fencing in the same way that the hardware does probably, but they've used that fence effectively in this case to give you a sense of entrance to the building. Okay, anything else on there?
I think there's just, tell me, have we done, oh, we already did Outfitters, right? Or did you want to talk to us
about that?
Yep. Okay, I think that's all. Oh, she had the bank. That was the other missing one.
Right, the flat-roofed bank, yeah.
This one.
Not a great building.
Not a great building. Has a new new sign.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, the one thing we can comment on in this bank is the awning. You know, the red awning. One of the ways of looking at buildings that we don't often adopt, but that is extremely helpful, is to say, okay, what is this building telling me? What message does this building have? And in this case, the building is helping you find the ATM, right? Because of the red awning. And so let's see, I got a cat here.
You feel faster, happier to go to the ATM than go inside.
Yeah. Hey, there we go. You can get a snuggle. Yeah, but then you need to go sit over here. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing distinguished about that building, but there's nothing particularly awful about it either. What would be a tremendous enhancement would be some landscaping over here along the edges and in front. You know, the rocks and stuff are nice, but the scale of the building dwarfs that xeriscape thing in front. It would probably look better if there was a little more of a vertical element. The shrubs they've got there are kind of wispy when you back off this far and look at them in front of the building. And again, the roof line, I don't know. Matt said he prefers pitched roofs. But flat roofs are pretty common in desert environments. So probably not something you want to completely discourage either.
I think that's all she had that I saw.
So before we try to reach some conclusions, is there anything else that people have to say about buildings and their elements and their design that occurs to you? Curtis made a point that I think is worth repeating here, and then I'll let him continue on with what I say if he wants to, is that he likes to have things like lodging or things of that nature broken up into smaller buildings rather than bigger monolithic buildings, and thinks that's more compatible with, more harmonious with Boulder, which I would tend to agree with. That's something that can be a consideration if you want. Anything else, people?
The only thing I would add to that, Lee, is that I know it's more expensive, but I don't think that the planning commission or the town council needs to necessarily say, well, the least expensive is what is the best. I think we need to protect the town of Boulder and detached forms definitely work better, as we've seen from the Boulder Mountain Lodge, and and in a way we're kind of lucky that set the template. You know, we just kind of lucked into that because of the person that built it decided he wanted to do it that way. And he bought all this stone around southern Utah and so forth and incorporated it. And it was quite a battle back in the mid-90s when all of that happened. It was a battle royal. But, you know, in a, it did set the template. It is there. The cottonwoods, all of the buffering has grown up. I remember when there was planting those things back in the late 90s. And now I think, you know, everybody looks at it and says, yeah, that really works. All the lawn, all the greenery, the size. Now it's on a big enough parcel and it does have water and irrigation and so forth to facilitate it. But so there's a lot of advantages there, but it is a nice kind of a thing to be able to shoot for if we can. And the colors are nice and the everything kind of blends in. A lot of people for years criticized the metal roofs and the rusting. It looked like a mining camp, but I think everybody's kind of gotten over that. And when metal roofs rust like that, they are non-reflective. If you put standing seam metal roofs, no matter what color they are, no matter how much you try to make them blend in, they are very reflective just by the nature, where rust or like copper, that is the patina, the nature of it, there's a little buildup and it can't reflect. So there's that, and asphalt roofing doesn't reflect, but those standing seam metal roofs that we saw in a couple of those do reflect. So anyway, that's kind of the history of the whole thing and the way it came about and whether we adopt that as sort of like, well, we can go forward from that or we can't, or whatever value it is to the Planning Commission members is up for them to decide, but that is kind of where we're at.
No, I was thinking too. Oh,
sorry. Go ahead, Peg. Sorry.
Well, since we're really not, Boulder's not going to have a commercial district as such. I mean, yeah. In terms of assuming that we continue on with what, you know, the way that we are working in commercial at this point. So if you ended up with a building in a GMU zone that's a commercial usage, it seems like that's going to be very dependent on the size and location of that property, what's going to be acceptable. You know, I don't, it's not like we don't have a commercial zone that we can expect buildings to look like this kind of thing. I just think that complicates the formation of, I don't know, any set of consistent, what am I trying to say? I just think it complicates the issue.
Well, it makes it hard to write precise guidelines. That's the trade-off.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
But, you know, how many of you have been to Leavenworth, Washington? You know, the Bavarian village up in the Cascades? You know, they have an ordinance that is quite precise, that you have to try to make your building, if you're in the middle of Leavenworth, at least look like you were in Bavaria. But I don't think a thematic thing like that fits Boulder at all. And I think you do have to, and that's why we're using the conditional use approach that we're using, the sort of performance-based approach. I think you have to accept that there's going to be a certain amount of discretion involved in these decisions, because there is quite a difference between being, you know, down close to the junction of Utah 12 and the Burr Trail, or in that part of Boulder, and out on some of the edges. The parcel sizes are different. The vegetation is different. There's a different environment that a building needs to respond to. And I think that it's going to require the use of some judgment, but some judgment that has practical guidelines that provide guidance. Telling someone not to create a jarring disharmony is not guidance. Telling someone that you want a palette of earth tones, but that accent colors and details are acceptable. Telling them that, you know, you want a varied roof line, but not a busy one. Telling them a few things like that. Non-reflective surfaces, that's pretty easy for people to get. You know, there are a handful of things that have come through here that I think people can respond to as a practical point of view. You know, it's difficult to say what might show up in Boulder or what might be proposed. I don't see big retail, but I can see different types of lodging and what we might generically call resort uses. And, you know, I think these guidelines work for somebody who's who's doing that. And I think it is going to be relatively obvious to anyone who actually has professional designers working for them that, you know, there's the cat's tail in the picture.
Yes. Zap.
Okay.
I have a couple of comments too here.
Yeah.
So I, for the planning commission and so on, I think in order to follow the general plan and preserve the character and so on, which is a pretty primary thing, it's actually really important to have commercial design features involved. And I think like Lee's saying, they can be fairly simple. What you were saying, the reflection, the varied roof lines, color with accents. I think when you get some basics in there, to me, it doesn't matter if it's in a commercial area or a GMU. I think it's an important layer of protection and sort of keeping things as they are or close to that. I have one question about detached forms. I mean, detached forms, I think, like with the Boulder Lodge are great, but when you get a KOA campground with 27 little cabins, that's a different level of detached form, which I don't like. So we'd have to be careful about languaging there. But overall, I feel like it's something that we should pursue as the planning commission and come up with a general commercial design feature just as a layer of protection.
I'm going to say something too about, we have about Paul's Place. Nobody's really talked about Paul's Place, but I like Paul's Place too, and it's very simple. It's got two buildings. But what stands out about Paul's Place too is all the landscaping that she has out in front, you know. So I kind of like their place too, as far as the diversity between the lodge and Paul's Place. And I think you're right, Matt, you know.
So how about this? I think we've had a good conversation about buildings and what they can or cannot accomplish. Obviously there are costs involved and people have to be cognizant of that, but an awful lot of what we're talking about does not affect the cost radically if that's where you start. You're planning and you understand that that's what you're trying to accomplish. If your vision of a commercial building is the classical Dollar General, then yes, complying with any design guidelines at all is going to be more expensive to some degree or other. But I don't think anybody is saying that we want a typical Dollar General store type building in Boulder. And so if Boulder gives you guidance to start with, then you know what your financial challenge is. What I would suggest is that before the September meeting, which is coming up sooner than we all think, but is that I try to write a set of probably a half dozen standards that go in with the rest of the commercial design standards and get those out to you a few days before the meeting, as I usually do, and let people gnaw on those at a work session before your September meeting.
That would be great.
I think that's as fast as we can go, and maybe even a little faster. But I can do that, get it out to you, and then if you're comfortable with how those look in draft form, we can tinker with them as much as we want to. Then we'd have a draft of the whole commercial package. And at that point, I would go back to my suggestion that it's time to hold a public hearing and see what people have to say on this much. And then if there are other issues that you want me to help you with after that, we can talk about that. But I don't like to pile too much on. to the conversation at any one point, and we're getting to where this is a lot.
Yeah.
So,
that's great.
I will work on this in accord with what you what we discussed tonight. Peg, if you could send me those slides of cookies, that would be helpful to me. I don't have my slides of that part of Utah are mostly do not include buildings. if that's a good plan, I can meet that deadline. Is there anything else?
That's a good plan to me. Thanks, Lee.
Yeah.
We probably need some time in that pre-September meeting to talk table of uses a bit too.
Yeah, we do. We have, I consolidated a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And the table of uses is really the overall philosophy there. Because I thought if we, you know, use and standards, use and performance balance each other. And the fewer standards you have, the pickier you have to be about the types of uses you allow. The better standards you have, the less picky you can be about use. And so the way that I try to set these things up leans heavily on the standards and not as much on trying to have really specific definitions of uses. I have picked up a few of the things that were in the use table here and there, like the definition of home mechanic thing got rewritten into a standard. There are other bits and pieces in there, and somebody reworked some of the official definitions of childcare in the table of uses, which was very helpful to modernize those in terms of the ordinance. So I don't know that we're gonna have big issues with the table of uses, but we can try to squeeze that in. It'll be a lot easier to talk about these design things now that we've gone through this conversation, and I can kind of see where your heads are at. It won't be that complex. So we can talk about those and the uses on September, whatever, if it is. See where we're at the end of that meeting.
September 10th, and we can do another 6 o'clock with you starting, if that works with you, Lee.
Yeah, Thursday nights. I may have some limitations on Tuesday nights as we go on into the fall. So doing the Thursday night for September will be good. And then we'll see how many more meetings we need after that before you guys decide to schedule a hearing.
That sounds good.
All righty.
That's good.
That sounds good. Okay. Josie, Matt, does anybody else have any comments?
No, it all sounds good.
What? I didn't hear that.
It all sounds good. Yeah, and I think like Lee was saying, I just, you know, for me, I want to make sure those standards hold up to the old table of uses definitions or the definitions we'd been trying to create. That's my only intention. So,
okay.
I think the process is fine. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I look forward to seeing what comes out of this meeting and what we can prepare for on the 10th.
Hey. Okay, good. Good. Okay, so we'll go ahead and close the meeting that we had tonight with our neat Lee Nellis workshop. Thank you, Lee, and have a great
thank you all.
Start of school.
Always good to have. We are testing the entire population of the college for COVID, and we'll see if anybody is positive, but hopefully not, and we'll be able to continue. But I've got 40-some freshmen that we're talking to about what's the relationship between people and the landscape.
Wow.
Good luck. Thank you very much.
A challenging enterprise. But we talked about today, you guys may or may not know, today is the birthday of the National Park Service.
Oh.
It's the 104th birthday of the National Park Service. So what we did in class today was talk about the history of the parks and had students share slides that they had from their adventures in national parks. So we saw quite a few slides of Southern Utah.
Wow.
This morning.
And I like National Park Service buildings too.
Oh, the old style.
Yeah.
you know, in there. The Mission 66 style has some interesting things, and there's some some of the older styles, the CCC 1930 styles, often are very attractive. In some of the parks, and some state parks too, have good CCC buildings from the 30s. So I will look forward to talking to all of you on the 10th of September.
Great. All right, great. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.